Welcome to the Paranormal Deep Dive from Real Ghost Stories Online and the Grave Talks.
You can almost hear it. The echo of boots on stone, the rattle of chains, the low murmur of someone who isn't there. In the heart of Boise, Idaho, surrounded by sagebrush and silence, stands a place that once echoed with agony, anger, and fear. The old Idaho State Penitentiary, built by convict labor and kept alive by suffering, was home to over 13,000 inmates during its century-long reign. It had no air conditioning, no insulation, and no mercy. The walls are made of sandstone, but they've absorbed more than just weather. They've soaked in pain. And some say they've never let it go. From the state's most infamous serial killer to the inmate who died in its only gas chamber, the stories that unfolded behind those cold iron bars didn't stop when the doors slammed shut for the last time in 1973. What came next was stranger. Visitors started hearing things, seeing things, feeling things they couldn't explain. And if you're lucky or unlucky enough to walk through the prison at night, you just might hear a whisper in Cell House 5 asking you to leave. Are these just tricks of the mind, echoes of a brutal past, or is something still waiting behind those walls? I'm Tony Bruschi. Let's dig in. In 1872, Idaho wasn't yet a state. It was still a rugged, lawless territory where miners, trappers, and drifters carved out a life among the dusty hills and jagged rocks. The need for order was growing. So when the first walls of the Idaho Territorial Prison rose from sandstone quarried just down the road, the message was clear. Civilization was coming. And it was bringing bars. The prison began humbly as a single cell house surrounded by a 17-foot wall. But the sandstone, extracted and hauled by inmates themselves, soon became a fortress. Over the decades, the facility would grow into a complex of more than 30 buildings, each serving a different grim purpose. Some housed general population, others contained death row inmates. One held the gas chamber. The architecture felt like a medieval castle dropped into the high desert, ornate in places yet cold, hard, and unrelenting. And unrelenting, it was. Inmates were tossed into this prison from every corner of the territory and later the state for crimes ranging from petty theft to murder. By the time the prison closed its gates for good in 1973, more than 13,000 men and women had called it home, if you can call it that. Most of them didn't leave with fond memories. Some didn't leave at all. The prison was infamous for its brutal conditions. Winters were bone-chilling, with inmates sometimes forced to sleep in damp blankets and cells that felt like meat lockers. Summers, meanwhile, turned those same stone boxes into ovens, baking the men alive inside. With no insulation, heating, or air conditioning, survival became a mental game as much as a physical one. Plumbing was rudimentary at best, especially in the early years. Inmates shared communal bathrooms with minimal privacy, and water was often contaminated. Hygiene was a luxury, not a right. Disease spread quickly. So did despair. Food was hardly nourishment. It was whatever could be scraped together, bread, beans, the occasional meat. And rations were often small. When fights broke out in the chow hall, it wasn't just about rivalries. It was about hunger. One too many spoiled potatoes and tempers flared like dry kindling. The prison industries program kept inmates busy. They built furniture, manufactured license plates, and worked the prison farm. But make no mistake, this wasn't about rehabilitation. It was about labor. And the labor was hard, sometimes dangerous. The quarry, in particular, left many men broken long before their sentences ended. Among the inmates, some names stood out. Perhaps none more chilling than Lida Southard, known as Idaho's Lady Bluebeard. Convicted of poisoning multiple husbands, along with her brother-in-law and even her own daughter, Lida served time in the women's ward. She was cold, calculating, and charismatic. Her presence still hangs like a fog over that section of the prison, even decades after her parole and eventual death. Then there was Raymond Snowden, called Idaho's Jack the Ripper by some. Convicted of a particularly brutal murder in 1956, Snowden was sentenced to die. His execution, carried out in 1957 in the prison's only gas chamber, did not go as planned. Witnesses reported that Snowden convulsed violently, gasped, and took nearly 15 minutes to die. The chamber was never used again. But death didn't wait for the gas chamber. Fights were frequent. Knives made from scrap metal were hidden in cells, under beds, or in the walls. Some inmates were killed over debts, others over insults. The line between predator and prey shifted constantly. Guards weren't immune either, though many turned a blind eye to the violence, simply trying to survive their shifts and make it home alive. By the 1950s, the situation was approaching a boiling point. Overcrowding was rampant, resources were stretched thin, rehabilitative programs were virtually non-existent. As the civil rights movement swept across America, the inmates at Old Idaho State Penitentiary grew increasingly aware of their conditions and increasingly angry. Riots began breaking out. The first major disturbance came in the 1950s, but it was just a preview. In 1971, prisoners staged a more organized rebellion, demanding better conditions, educational opportunities, and basic dignity. The administration made promises. Little changed. Then came the riot of 1973. Fueled by frustration, heat, and hopelessness, inmates set fire to parts of the prison, including the chapel. Flames lit up the desert sky. Guards were overwhelmed. Order disintegrated. It was chaos. Violent, smoke-choked chaos. When the dust settled, the prison was no longer tenable. The decision was made, shut it down. The gates closed for good later that year. But what about the place itself? Decades of agony had seeped into every wall, every cell, every hallway. The sandstone, porous and natural, had absorbed the cries, the prayers, the rage. Many who walked through the site after its closure described an unsettling feeling, an emotional heaviness that clung to the air. Some dismissed it as the power of suggestion. Others weren't so sure. Psychologists have noted that places of great emotional trauma often leave a psychological imprint, not just on those who experience it, but on those who visit afterward. It's the same reason why standing in an old battlefield or a burned-down asylum can evoke an eerie sense of presence. The brain, conditioned by stories and visuals, fills in the gaps. Add in environmental cues, like creaking floors, echoes off stone, or sudden temperature shifts, and you have a perfect recipe for perceived hauntings. And that sandstone, some paranormal researchers theorize that it may actually store emotional energy, like a recording device that occasionally replays the past. Though there's no scientific consensus on that, it's an idea that keeps surfacing, especially in old buildings with porous materials and violent histories. Then there's the power of the mind itself. Suggestibility is a powerful force. When people are told a place is haunted, their brains tend to heighten awareness, listening more acutely, noticing every flicker, every sound. Combine that with the prison's intimidating atmosphere, and visitors begin to feel as though they're not alone, even when they are. Yet some reports go beyond suggestion. Soon after the prison opened to the public for tours, reports began trickling in. Cold spots, voices, shadows. Some guides swore they heard footsteps behind them when no one else was around. A former maintenance worker claimed to have tools go missing, only to find them days later in locked cells he hadn't entered. The building was closed, but something inside wasn't. And Cell House 5, where Snowden drew his final breath, started gaining a reputation. Not just as a historical site, but as something else entirely. Something alive in a place where everything else was long dead. It didn't take long after the gate slammed shut in 1973 for the whispers to begin. Not the gossip of guards or echoes of prisoners, but literal whispers. Disembodied, inexplicable, chilling. The reports came first from staff members overseeing the newly opened historical site. What started as subtle, odd feelings, flickering lights, soon escalated into unmistakable experiences. Cold spots appeared in empty cell blocks. Footsteps echoed across the floor when no one else was present. Maintenance workers claimed their tools would vanish mid-shift, only to reappear in strange, locked areas hours or even days later. Some laughed it off, others didn't come back. Then came the public. When the old Idaho State Penitentiary opened to visitors in the late 1970s and 80s, it drew history buffs, students, and the morbidly curious. but some left with more than they bargained for. Tour guides began compiling stories, visitors who fainted. In Cell House 5, children who said they saw the man with no face, and guests who fled the solitary confinement wing in terror. The reports were too specific, too consistent to ignore. Cell House 5 quickly rose to prominence as the most haunted building on the grounds. This is where the most violent offenders were kept. Murderers, rapists, the condemned. It's also where Raymond Snowden spent his final days before being executed in the prison's only gas chamber, a small, sterile room tucked away like an afterthought. His death was violent, prolonged, and traumatic. And some say it never ended. Visitors to Cell House 5 describe a wave of dread that hits just past the threshold. The temperature drops noticeably. Electronic devices, phones, cameras, recorders frequently lose battery power without explanation. Some claim to hear dragging footsteps down the corridor. Others report hearing a man muttering unintelligible words in the far corner cell. The very one that once belonged to Snowden. The execution chamber itself has developed a reputation all its own. Volunteers have described nausea, shortness of breath, and even panic attacks inside the gas chamber. And it's not just psychological. One former staff member, a skeptic by her own admission, claims she felt an invisible weight pressed down on her chest the moment she entered the room, like something wanted her out. But the most unsettling experiences often come from the area known as Siberia. Siberia was solitary confinement, a row of tiny, windowless, concrete cells built to break the mind. Prisoners could be left in isolation for days, sometimes weeks. No light, no sound, just darkness and their own thoughts. Today, the cells remain exactly as they were, bare, cold, and silent, except they're not. Visitors regularly report whispers in Siberia, though the wing is empty. Some hear their own name called softly from behind. Others feel the sensation of fingers brushing their back or neck. Several have bolted from the corridor, refusing to return. One paranormal investigator conducting an overnight EVP session in Siberia captured a voice that seemed to say, "Don't leave me here." There was no one else in the cell block. The building had been locked from the outside. Documented investigations of the site have revealed more than just eerie anecdotes. Ghost Adventures filmed an episode inside the penitentiary in 2010, capturing alleged shadow figures and unexplained audio. Local paranormal groups have also documented sudden EMF spikes, temperature fluctuations, and voices recorded on digital equipment, some pleading, some growling, others simply weeping. But the stories aren't confined to professional teams. Everyday people, tourists, historians, even journalists have had personal encounters. One woman touring the women's ward reported seeing a figure in old-fashioned clothing walking down the corridor. Thinking it was part of the tour, she followed, only to watch the figure dissolve into the stone wall. Another man claimed he was shoved while walking past the site of the 1973 riot fire near the ruined chapel. He turned around expecting to confront a prankster. No one was there. Many describe the haunting as intelligent, spirits that interact, respond, or seem aware of the living. Yet others argue the phenomena are residual, like tape loops of past trauma. Screams echo in areas where no one is present. Cell doors slam at 3 a.m. Shadows dart between bars, only to vanish. If these are intelligent spirits, they're elusive. If they're echoes, they're loud ones. The experiences fall into patterns. In Cell House 5, it's the sound of chains dragging and whispered confessions. In Siberia, it's the cold touch of invisible hands and the sensation of being watched. In the chapel ruins, people hear coughing, just once, just faintly, and then silence. And in the administration building, more than one night, watchman has reported hearing typewriters clicking away long after the offices emptied out. And then there are the keys. Dozens of reports reference the sound of jangling keys, fast, insistent, just out of reach. Some tour guides even keep spare sets on their belts, only to find them swinging on their own. Others have claimed their keys disappeared entirely, later found neatly placed outside locked rooms. It's as though someone or something wants control of the place back. Some visitors bring offerings, flowers, letters, even candy, to the solitary wing, hoping to soothe whatever remains. Others snap photos and return later to find faces in the windows. Faces that weren't there before. But not all theories lean paranormal. Skeptics argue the sandstone walls themselves are responsible, not because they store energy, but because they reflect and carry sound in unusual ways. A whisper in one cell can travel, bouncing through vents and corners, only to emerge several feet away. A kind of audio trickery could make any visitor feel haunted. Add to that the power of suggestion, the weight of history, and the stories told before every tour, and you have a recipe for mass hallucination, at least according to some. But if it's all in the mind, why are the stories so consistent? Year after year, new guests report the same sounds, the same feelings, the same shadows, crossing the same threshold. Why would multiple people faint in the same hallway? Why do children describe the same ghost, a tall man with a missing face, without ever hearing about him first? There are no easy answers. One theory gaining popularity is that intense trauma, especially in places like execution chambers and solitary confinement, leaves behind more than emotional scars. It imprints energy into the environment like a stain that can't be scrubbed out. Paranormal investigators call this the stone tape theory, and the old Idaho State Penitentiary is one of its prime case studies. Others believe more active forces are at work, that some inmates died angry, betrayed, abandoned, and that their spirits haven't moved on because they refuse to, or because they're still waiting for justice or revenge. There's no shortage of questions, but there's also no denying the atmosphere. Even if you don't believe in ghosts, walking through Cell House 5 with only a flashlight can feel like stepping into another world, one that doesn't want you there. And some say, you might not leave alone. You walk into the old Idaho State Penitentiary expecting rusted bars, maybe some grim history. What you don't expect is the hair on your arms to stand straight up or your breath to fog in a room that shouldn't be cold. You don't expect to hear footsteps when you're alone or to leave with more questions than you came in with. We've heard the stories, phantom footsteps, doors slamming shut, disembodied voices. We've followed the trail through solitary cells and execution chambers, met the ghosts of Snowden, Southard, and the unnamed many who died behind sandstone walls. But here's the million-dollar question. Is it all real? Or is it just the prison playing tricks on the mind? There's no doubt the brain is a master illusionist. When you're told a place is haunted, your senses sharpen, and every creak becomes a ghost. Environmental psychologists call it priming. Throw in cold drafts, echoing architecture, and some good old-fashioned fear. Your mind fills in the blanks, perfectly rational. Except for one thing, too many people report the same things, the same voices, same shadows, same spots, over decades. That's the part that's hard to brush off as coincidence or imagination. Could it be residual energy? Intelligent spirits, maybe even a little of both. Then again, maybe it's all just leftover pain. That prison saw over 100 years of misery. People lived, suffered, and died inside those walls. Maybe what's haunting the old Idaho State Penitentiary isn't ghosts at all. Maybe it's history. Heavy, unfinished, unforgiving. Whatever the truth is, one thing's for sure. If you plan to visit Boise's most infamous landmark, don't go alone. And if you hear keys jingling in the dark, run. Just run. I'm Tony Bruschi. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any episodes and so you can join us again for another Paranormal Deep Dive.
Want to dig deeper in the Paranormal Deep Dive? Press subscribe now wherever you download podcasts and catch brand new Paranormal Deep Dives every single day from Real Ghost Stories Online and the Grave Talks podcast.